We are happy that we are here together. Actually, we're supposed to be two sides of the same coin. And I sincerely believe we need to explore ways in which we can complement each other's work. I don't know how, but I think that is something that does need to be looked at, not just for us who are here, but going forward for Parliament, you know, to enhance the effectiveness of our oversight work. So what we're going to do, comrades, we'll hand over to the Auditor General. He will talk to us, and thereafter we'll have the opportunity to ask a few clarity-seeking questions so that we can depart to go and prepare for the sitting of the House today. Very important sitting that we should all be there to debate the issues at hand. Okay, I'll hand over to the AG. We're all here.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me upfront appreciate the understanding of the committee members for my late arrival. The guys that brought me here did not meet their part of the agreement for takeoff, so that's why I ended up getting here this time. They unilaterally decided that the flight is going to be at a different time than the one that we arranged. Chair, let me quickly get on to the presentation and perhaps just cut straight to the chase here. I'll make reference to the pages because I think all of us have got copies of the presentation, and I know that you do not prefer to have staff on the board when there are copies of the presentation. So if it's fine for members to follow me as I make reference to on page this and that now. Is that okay, Chair? If I start on page 3, Chair, the page 3 is really the accountability cycle that we have been communicating with our general reports, which tries to bring to the attention of the users of our report what are the different stages that need to be followed in any institution's financial statements. If we are to have effective oversight, those are the four steps that we have been articulating to all committees, to all of the people that we present these audit outcomes to. So for purposes of the 2016-17 PFMA, which has not yet been launched, as members would be aware, we normally have these interactions before we finally launch the report. So what we are analyzing today in this presentation is in regards to the outcomes overall for all the provinces, as well as all the national departments and their entities. But we just like to reinforce the point here that the planning, doing, checking, and acting activity, as we set it out on page 3, we believe that it is one of the most important slides that we need to take note of, regardless of whether we are doing oversight at SCOPA or whether we are doing oversight in other portfolio committees. Moving on, Chair. Just on page 4 as well, we just want to share with yourselves as you look at the financial statements, because many of them, once they are signed, they normally don't tell the story behind what happened while we were busy doing the audit. And what we have on page 4, without paying specific attention to any one of these, there are quite a number of combination of interactions in terms of our experience, some healthy, some not as healthy. But I guess it's important in an audit that there is a level to which people who are responsible for keeping the financial records to contest certain issues. But we often find that some of them are just contestations that are sometimes baseless. So on page 4, we then share with you so that at least in each of these entities, you are aware that the process of an audit, as we experience it through our teams, is not a smooth process. It's a process that attracts with it a number of things. And one of the things that we have noted, Chair, which is starting to gain prominence, is the whole area of threats for litigation, particularly when we surface adverse conclusions on audits. We want to make note of this. It's a very strange behavior in a number of instances, because the kind of stuff that we pick up in an audit is very clearly and glaringly a deviation from prescribed internal controls. It's got very little to do with deep legal matters, because we really take from the management of the entity what are the systems in place to prevent certain things, and when we find those systems are not working, we then report as such. But now we have seen a growing trend of threats of litigation and our audit opinions being threatened to be taken for review and all sorts of things, as we have said on page 4. It's worth noting, so that when we look at this evidence and when you look at the briefings that you will have with our team members, then at least they can give you the concrete detail on some of this. Part of this, Chair, raises its head, especially when there are external third-party service providers that are involved in the implementation of the work of some of these departments. It obviously raises the red flag to us that you didn't even implement this thing, but you are already taking a hard line in respect of the contestations that are experienced by our teams. So I think it's something worth noting, because what's written in the financial statements is the numbers that represent the finances, but some of the behavioral aspects is probably important that you know about, because those are the qualitative elements that are prevalent in the environment in which we audit. I'm going to skip page 5 of this slide presentation, because it's really just a re-articulation of the different types of audit outcomes, which you will see in the subsequent slides, where we explain what is an unqualified with no findings, right down to the outstanding audits. Chair, it's also worth noting that some of the TVET colleges that were previously audited by private audit firms are now audited by us, and you will see year on year the number of entities that have been audited in the 16-17 year have slightly increased from the previous year because of the taking back of some of the TVET colleges from private audit firms. Let's have a look at page 6, Chair, which I think is probably going to give you a very high-level summary of the key areas that we think are often a preoccupation of the Oversight Committee. If I start at the top there with state-owned entities, with financial health, unauthorized expenditure, all of them around that spider web. Let me just quickly give a background to this spider web, Chair. If you look at that accountability chain that we spoke about, what we are saying, if you look at the sender here, is that if the internal controls, as well as the disciplines that are aimed at protecting and preventing abuse of finances and financial systems, a lot of these audits that we audit ought to be right at the center where the arrow is pointing, which means that if they are there, then we are 100% happy that they have implemented all the required internal controls. Whether those internal controls are about irregular expenditure prevention, whether they are about implementing supply chain management prescripts as required, whether they are about the state of internal controls in terms of who is doing what internal controls and how effectively they are, as well as even if it has to do with assurance providers. So what you see on that spider web, Chair, is that if all is good, everybody should be at the center. And you can see that in terms of the navy line, which is the 16-17 line, compared to the red one, that's the status of 2015-16 to 16-17 year. Let me just give one example of this. If one looks at the area of internal control, what you are saying, if you look at the internal control line where it touches on that spider web, it touches on the range that is between 20 and 40, meaning that internal controls in all of these entities that we have audited are effective to the extent of 30% of the entities. That's what that slide means. It means that internal controls, if that line is sitting somewhere between 20 and 30, and 40, which is about 30, it means that the internal controls in the entities that we have audited were found to be effective to the extent of about 30% of them.
However, if you also look at unauthorized expenditure, unauthorized expenditure is sitting somewhere around 90%, which means that 90% of the entities and auditees that we have looked at have got no problems with unauthorized expenditure. So whenever that line is navigating towards the center in the middle, it means things are looking good as far as that category is concerned. The further away it is from the center, it means that we are in the lower percentages of appreciation of those internal controls. Just one last example, if you look at the assurance providers, they are sitting on the 40% line, which means that both the primary assurance providers, which is management, the internal oversight structures like your internal audit and audit committee, were found in a number of these entities to be effective to the extent of about 40% of them. So that's what the slide in number 6 is, Chair. It can be read in that context for each one of these issues. So that's really the highlight here to say there are a number of areas of internal control that were found to be very weak in a number of departments and entities, and that spider web depicts that picture. As well as on the issue of the audit outcomes, Chair, you'll see that those that had credible audit outcomes were somewhere around between 20 and 40. I think that line is sitting closer to 25, thereabouts, 28. So that's effectively what is on page 6. What we also had a look at, Chair, this year, in addition to the, I'm now on slide 7. What we also looked at this year, Chair, was to check, after we have audited the finances that were appropriated, to what extent were they used in relation to what was set out in the estimates of national expenditure. And this is an exercise to check whether the programs that were being implemented, were they the programs that were agreed against which these budgets were appropriated? And we looked at various projects in that regard. For example, the likes of your water infrastructure delivery was one of the things we looked at to check whether, in terms of the estimates of national expenditure, were these expenditures towards addressing some of the identified programs already. We looked at the area of expanded public works programs to assess the effectiveness with which those programs were implemented, as well as the likes of your school infrastructure and so on. Here on page 8, Chair, we look at whether the targets that were set out per the estimates of national expenditure after we have done the testing, whether they were, the planned targets were achieved. You'll note that the total budget of the 5 programs that we looked at was about 58.5 billion, of which 98% were spent either by the department or transferring agents. To provincial departments, municipalities, and public entities. So what it says here is that having picked up 5 programs to the extent of that amount, we found quite a significant level of expenditure on them in terms of what was planned and what was targeted. If one looks at the budgets that were spent, the lowest achievement of these was for water and school infrastructure. Plans were in place, but the actual expenditures, especially in that one program, as far as the budget is concerned, was the lowest. Some departments had various projects that were underperforming and were behind schedule, largely driven by planning, but also resources that were in place having been exhausted after it had been spent on either these or other programs. The management of the grants, there were a couple of projects that we looked at as well in addition to the financial statements where we looked at the execution of these projects. You'll find some of the findings as well as the issues that were identified in each of the departmental reports as well as in the provincial departments. But notably, here in looking at the projects on page 9, some provincial department handled projects as well as those that were grants from the EPWP as well as school infrastructure. The budget of about 30.7 billion overall for these 5 grants was also tested during the audit. The achievement of planned targets in terms of the grant framework, at least a credible 70% of them have achieve the targets that were set, but there were still some that were still not achieving their targets. At least the percentage in relation to the total was not that significant. There are issues in relation to the effective monitoring of grant utilization as well as the performance of the grants as required by DORA. There are some projects in respect of the school infrastructure grants where we identified certain targets not achieved. And I think it's important to look at the overall outcome of this part, Chair, because it starts giving context to the numbers that are reported in the financial statements, because standing alone, those numbers, they mean certain deficiencies were identified, but they don't drill down to whether the money was spent on what was intended. So this exercise in evaluating the management of grants as well as the issues of supply chain were identified. You'll see in the top bullet on your right-hand side on the slide number 9, where we identified that supply chain management non-compliance was most prevalent on the school infrastructure projects, including the Ilima, Litsima, and human settlements. So these are the type of programs, among others, that were subjected to these supply chain management non-compliance, hence the levels of irregular expenditure that you will find associated with those projects. The use of implementing agents, Chair, is also another prevalent feature when one looks at these projects. And clearly, third parties who are running their own business, when they are engaged in order to support these departments, are also expected to be engaged by using supply chain management rules. But the level of deviations from the supply chain management whenever third-party agents are used. And we have looked at this in our analysis and started seeing some correlation between the contestations for audit conclusions on supply chain, particularly where implementing agents were used. Page 10, we also have picked up a couple of projects that we audited, Chair, in the water infrastructure projects, underwater and sanitation, and we have identified some projects where overspending of the budgets was prevalent, and there was an increase, for example, in some of the original budgets that were agreed. You'll see here we make an example of Nwamitwa Dam, where the budget was originally at 1.3 and was subsequently increased to 3.7. Non-compliance with SCM legislation on 80% of the projects was identified, particularly in this particular project and on the Zanin project that was audited. Contractors, there were instances of overpayment, and I think this is a reflection, Chair, of the issue that we have been highlighting over the years, that in the absence of disciplined reconciliations of records, instances of overpayment sometimes do occur, and we can imagine how difficult it is to recover that extra money which was paid once it's already in somebody else's bank account. Project management, Chair, we want to flag this as well so that for your own purposes you know that there's money involved when project management is not pursued and implemented diligently. And there are a number of instances in the report which point to the fact that because government has got projects that run sometimes for 6 months, 2 years, 10 years, the absence of these disciplines sometimes is at the core and at the heart of some of the levels of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. A number of issues, Chair, without going into any detail, are largely to do with this, because projects, when they are delayed, sometimes attract penalties and they attract additional costs. So what you see on page 10 is just a reflection from our overall analysis on the effectiveness with which some of the projects that were identified in national departments are concerned. And I think it's worth noting this, Chair, because historically we have been paying attention to the issues of irregular expenditure on the face of the balance sheet and the income statement. But a lot of the information pertaining to the reporting by accounting officers on their experience of delivering this is normally sitting in the annual report. And I think it will be important as the committee starts planning its review work together with appropriations to start having a look at what are they saying, the accounting officers, in their annual report in light of the findings that we have made. Because ultimately, the money could all be spent, but if we have no idea about what the quality of that expenditure is, what are the things that were achieved with it, we may as well just be doing oversight for the numbers' sake. Right, now we're looking at the slide number 11 here, which is about state-owned entities and their audit outcomes. Chair, these state-owned entities are the ones that are under the direct audit of the audit office. What you have on the slide here is a picture that is almost similar over the years as far as the state-owned entities are concerned. But you will note that all of them, with the exception of two, have had repeat findings in the area of compliance. What it means here is that for all of these that we have listed here, even though their financial statements were found to be unqualified insofar as the accounting discipline was implemented, but there is a glaring presence of repeat findings in the area of supply chain management as well as compliance with financial rules. I think it's worth noting that instance, barring the unqualified position that they ended up in. The number of, under those state-owned entities, the number of outstanding audits that we have encountered, the likes of your IDT, South African Express, South African Airways, HFs, SAA Technical, and Mango Airlines. You will note that those entities are actually part of the SAA group, with the exception of Independent Development Trust and SAA Express being a standalone airline. But for the rest, those four, they are part of the entities that are audited or are under the watchful eye of SAA. Chair, we have not signed off on the SAA accounts, but we have completed the audit work. So the people who are in the institution are supposed to do things that will get us to a point where we can sign. And those things, among others, are to address the risk that has been identified, which is about the going concern issue. From us, on an audit, we do not sign until we are happy with the going concern considerations that have been painted by management and the entity. Until we get to that point, our signature will remain outstanding on the accounts. So we are waiting for that. I'm sure all of us are aware of the different things that have already happened to try and address this matter towards that conclusion. So it's not that these accounts are not signed because there are difficulties in the audit. No, it's just one of those processes where there must be clearance of the going concern risk, because financial statements are normally signed when management says that they are comfortable they are a going concern. Ours as auditors is to express ourselves independently on the assumptions that they have made, as well as the available evidence they have produced, in order for us to either concur or disagree with them, depending on the circumstances and the information made available. So we will still have these outstanding until we reach that point. Levels of irregular expenditure and supply chain management issues as far as SOEs are concerned, we can already see here that we were shy of the 2 million mark. We've now started climbing the level of irregular expenditure on SCM. I think you can see the evidence of that on the previous slide, where we showed repeat findings that are coming also from previous years with regards to the area of irregular expenditure. The typical supply chain management deficiencies that we have found, Chair, are, among others, the fact that the arm's length process, which is driven largely sometimes by the written quotations, the application of the different elements of supply chain as shown on the slide, were what we found mostly in many of these SOEs as far as supply chain is concerned. And it tells us the story about why we are now starting to see an increase in the level of overall irregular expenditure. SOEs financial health on page 13. Chair, this is where we look at the likes of these entities from the point of view of their information in terms of the balance sheet as well as the income statement. As we said earlier on, we have not yet received the SAA Group final financial statements, as management is still busy dealing with issues of continuous operations into the future. However, it is worth noting, among all of these that we are reporting on, about 58% of them incurred a deficit during 16-17, and these included AMSCOR and NEXA. That deficit, Chair, for purposes of flagging, I think in terms of the ability to survive and to operate, most times it's important that the revenue generated at least exceeds the expenditure incurred, but in this instance it's the other way around, which means that the level of resources available to continue to meet the commitments is starting to slip away. The payment of creditors over 30 days, I think, is one of the regulated disciplines to say that those that run their other businesses also need to survive because they require to be paid. And a couple of instances among these SOEs where the creditor payment period was not always observed. Vacancies as well as issues of stability, Chair, you'll recall that when we look at the root causes of our audit outcomes over a number of years, we've always attributed them to issues pertaining to vacancies as well as stability in leadership. And if you look at the stats that we are picking up, about 35% of these, for example, did not have CEOs at year end. Average vacancy rate at senior management running at about 17%. And those are some of the gaps, Chair, that we think are not often articulated in the face of a balance sheet and income statement, but are the fundamental ingredients for ensuring that there is proper discipline and there are proper controls in an operating environment. And then the status of financial health of other auditees. The majority of them, Chair, look well if you look at the green bar where it sits, which is those that have two or less unfavorable indicators. And these are just indicators, quite frankly. Things can change depending on what the operational outcomes of their activities is. However, on the yellow part, where there is about 119 of them, it's where we have picked up more than two unfavorable indicators, and the pink line is where there is significant doubt that operations can continue into the future. And that's where you've got many instances of deficits, you've got many instances of losses that have been incurred in the operating environment. Chair, let me now have a look at the area of unauthorized expenditure, another indicator of financial health issues at departments. Mainly, Chair, for the majority of these, the occurrence of the unauthorized expenditure is driven by overspending of the budget, mainly. And in this instance, there were largely about 19 departments in the current period that had instances of unauthorized expenditure. A lot of these, in terms of the breakdown as to which provinces they are listed on the page, on page 15. So these are the respective amounts by province, as well as the consolidated figure for national, which is sitting at 448 of the area of unauthorized expenditure. The page 16, Chair, is the analysis of the outcomes of these audits. I think it is clear here that almost everything else is similar to the previous years. The one exception is the blue line that is now starting to become a feature of these accounts. Over the years, we've had situations where outstanding audits were just about an exception in a number of these years. Now, this has now become a dominant feature. If one looks at the ones that have either held back their financial statements because they are contesting certain issues the auditors have raised, others may not have submitted these financial statements at the required time and were not completed up to the time of the analysis. So there are a couple of them, Chair, that you would note. Let me just highlight a few that we have not signed off yet. In these outcomes, for example, we have not yet signed on SARS because there's a matter that we are busy tossing and turning around with them in order to complete the audit. And there are also quite a number of other departments, including, I think, the defense, where also at the tail end of the audit there are some contentious issues that we are busy engaging them on and have not signed on them until we are satisfied independently from the audit that the evidence that surfaced after we had contested those, raised those issues, is adequate for us to conclude on the audit. So there are a number of these then that are spread across and you'll see them in a further slide as to which provinces, which departments nationally and so on. But if I look at the page 17 on the slideshow where we show what is the state of progress with regards to audit outcomes of education, health and public works versus other departments. We isolate these three portfolios, Chair, because historically they are the portfolios that have been always attracting the greater part of the budget. And when we look at them, Chair, we look at them, these respective departments at provinces. As you can see the numbers, for example, here we're talking about 30. If you look at slide 16-17, the 30 is the 9 provinces times 3 departments plus 1 department nationally times 3. So that's 27 plus 3, that's 30. And that's what that 30 represents here. So which means that there are only 2 clean audits within the health, public works, and education sectors across all of these provinces added together. However, it is worth noting, Chair, that there was a red element that we always had, especially in this particular health, education, and public works portfolio. That was Limpopo up to last year, the Department of Education in Limpopo. They've now escaped the disclaimer because somewhat they came to the party and produced all the required audit evidence. However, they are still purple. They are part of the 12 in 2016-17. So I think, Chair, we must highlight the fact that they have been on a long-term journey to try and get out of a disclaimer, and in 2016-17 they have now achieved it. So that is the status, Chair, as far as you can see that there's, other than the change in education in Limpopo, the rest of these remained as they were over the previous periods. I'm not going to speak to page 18, Chair. That's just the movement slide that shows us which ones have gone backwards and which ones, maybe just for purposes of completeness, Chair, you'll see that overall in these analyses of the 420-odd entities that we audited, about 60 of them improved as compared to where they were the previous year. About 259 of them remained exactly as they were in terms of audit outcome, and there was disappointingly regressions as well from clean audit. If you look at, for example, the number of entities that regressed from clean audit to unqualified with findings was about 23 of them, but disappointingly there's one that came straight from clean down to adverse as a finding. So it jumped many other possible outcomes, and it ended up in an adverse. I think this is just an illustration here to show that. And I think the team will be able to share some specific insights as to the detail of what gave rise to that. But I think it's worth noting that those that had achieved these desirable audit outcomes sometimes are not able to hold on to them for various reasons. On page 19, Chair, we try and give a national picture or profile of these audit outcomes, as you would see by province, as well as the ones that are in the national environment. It is pleasing to see that, Chair, despite many other difficulties encountered with either outstanding audits or contestations, there are those that are continuing to do better. From 61 clean audits in the previous year to 74, at least within the national portfolios, including their entities, and with the rest of them remaining almost the same, but the one prominent element there is the fact that the bulk of those that have not been signed off are within the national portfolios. And the only place where you find others that have not been signed off by the concluding date, there was one in the Western Cape, I think it was the Agriculture Department, and two in KZN. Otherwise, for the bulk of the outstanding audits, they are not in the provinces, but largely in the national portfolios. And then, Chair, also on this slide, We sometimes set this picture out as it is, and we normally do not analyze and compare these provinces because it's very difficult to do that, and I'm sure you probably have more information than we do to be able to do your own analysis on them. But that's the picture year on year that we often provide so that we can at least see that the dominant provinces that continue to contribute to credible accounting disciplines and financial management stand out for themselves in the picture, I think. One of the stuff we also have in our general report, Chair, is also the analysis of this budget, or of these audit outcomes, through the different functional budget groups. As you know, as these things get planned in the estimates of national expenditure, they normally get grouped into all of these categories. And we've also grouped the audit outcomes in relation to the same categories, where we're starting to pick up how many departments have been cleaned in the economic affairs functional group, as you can see, and there's also quite a number of those in that functional group that have also been outstanding, the same as general public services and so on. We do have a list of which departments make up which of these functional groups, and I'm sure these are the same as the ones that are in the estimates of national expenditure. Alongside, just for an appreciation of how much money is being spent in these functional groups in relation to the type of outcomes they have is what we are setting out on the site. We are not drawing any conclusion on the relationship between a budget and an audit outcome. It's just information for us to appreciate that in instances where, for example, we have clean audits, the amounts that are being spent, as well as in instances where we have qualified audits and disclaimers, what are the resources that are going through those areas. You will note, Chair, that in the area of school education and training, certainly a number of adverse findings have been picked up, but as I said earlier on, a number of instances also within the basic education environment were also identified. I've spoken to the outstanding audits, Chair. You'll see further elaboration of the detail on that on page one, and some of these were subsequently finalized as well, if one looks at that number. So this number is going to drop as we finalize them, and hopefully the other big ones that have been outstanding will also be finalized soon. On page 22, when we look at the three elements, Chair, that make up for the clean audit conclusion that we often sign off on, you will note that in the past then we continue to split the work that we do between the audit of financial statements, which is that which give rise to either a qualified or an unqualified opinion, and we also do work to assess annual performance information that gets reported, as well as the findings on compliance with key legislation. So just for recollection, all three of these elements make up for a clean audit. And here, when we look at the departments, we're looking at the quality of their financial statements, performance reports, and compliance. It is clear, Chair, that most of these departments do not have major trouble with preparing financial statements, even though sometimes they get that after they were assisted through the audit. But at least that journey, even though there's a slight regression from 82% of them to 78%, has always been around the 70 percentile level. But within that, it shouldn't remain there. We should push the challenge for people to be able to do financial statements, especially that they have financially trained people who are employed under a CFO in most instances. It shouldn't be difficult to know that when a debit hits another account, there's got to be a consequent activity that needs to be taken care of by the accountants to make sure that the books reflect the true state of affairs. The number is on the high side as far as it is now, but we cannot excuse the fact that people escape passing the test with regards to what they did with the money and how they recorded and accounted for it. Coming to the area of annual performance reports, even us, as an audit office, Chair, we have admitted that this is sometimes a very tricky area, especially if there are different departments and entities and units that collaborate together to deliver on certain deliverable targets. Most departments have not yet caught on to the discipline of keeping the accurate information to be subjected to an audit. We believe that this is not a train smash. It is something that all of us need to grow into. It also responds to the fact that auditors sometimes might have a blind spot in this area, because this is not their area of technical expertise in most instances. But we have taken on board the desire between ourselves, the performance monitoring and evaluation team in the presidency, as well as at National Treasury, to go back and look at what is the most appropriate thing to be reported and how it should be audited. So this is an ongoing journey. Much as one sees the percentage success in providing performance information, we still know that there is a lot of developmental work to be done here. The area most disappointingly, as we said earlier, is the compliance with legislation. And this is where the bulk of the triggers for payments and triggers for contracts and triggers for extensions of contracts already in existence and issues pertaining to deviations from supply chain management, you'll find them in large numbers. And that's why that green is starting to escape a little bit in relation to the other two components that make up for the financial audits that we sign off. So, Chair, if I were to say that where must the attention be? I think the attention must be on all of them, but more on the compliance with legislation issues, because that's where the bulk of the issues that are of interest to the committee and to us will be in large numbers. But there's no taking the eye off the audit of financial statements, even though on a developmental trajectory, this is on the right side percentage-wise, but I think more work needs to be done to discourage qualified audits, as it were. Public entities, a similar profile, Chair. I'm not going to say more about it. I guess the statement I made on the previous slide will hold also for this one. It's a similar trend where less compliance is observed when it comes to the compliance with legislation, but other things sometimes get to be done as expected. Qualification areas, Chair, that we have picked up in the audits, as we do on page 24. In departments, you'll find that the area of assets is largely a trouble still. Either the assets are not in the accounting records, or the asset registers do not accurately reflect the assets, or management does not know where other assets are. Level of irregular expenditure as well is another area that attracts qualifications in a number of financial statements, contingent liabilities and commitments, as well as expenditure. So these are the common areas that from an evaluation and appraisal of financial statements would require closer attention. Different entities and different departments have got different challenges, but they all predominantly revolve around these matters. You'll see with public entities, similar story with asset management. However, the payables, accruals, and borrowings are also a dominant feature. Now, Chair, I think it's interesting to wonder the area of payables, accruals, and borrowings with public entities, because these are the ones that have got the large number of infrastructure projects that are also working with third-party service providers in terms of implementation or outsourcing that work. So payables, accruals, and borrowings is the reflection of the liabilities that arise as a result of those commitments they've made with the third-party agents that implement on their behalf. So it's clear that this is an area that is predominantly a risk, especially when it comes to public entities. And then the money raised as well as the receivables collected also within the public entities is also another area that has attracted a number of qualifications. Chair, let me deal with slide number 26, improvement over 4 years in some of the most common non-compliance areas. The prevention of unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure is at about 55%, where we've seen a regression compared to the period that you are assessing, which is 4 years. The quality of financial statements submitted, we've seen some improvement in that area. The management of procurement contracts, that one as well has gone up. The expenditure management, some improvement, as well as the transfer of conditional grants. So we are starting to see, Chair, a couple of areas that over the last 4 years were the common non-compliance area starting to receive some attention, but not complete in the sense that they have not dealt with all the internal control weaknesses in their environment. Coming to the irregular expenditure, Chair, you'll note that last year's figure for, let me just start with that, last year's figure was 46.6 billion of irregular expenditure that we reported, and that figure last year was inclusive of PRASA. but PRASA is not included in these accounts. So this 46 that you see now is before you brought PRASA into it. PRASA, if you recall, last year would have been about 14 thereabouts of irregular expenditure, which was included in the 2015-16 analysis. So if you add about 14 to the 29, you'll get closer to the 46 that was there last year. So what we said, in order to do a like-for-like comparison, if PRASA is not included in the current year, let's also exclude it from the last year so that we can do like-for-like comparison. So as soon as PRASA comes, let's assume that PRASA maintains, let's assume that when PRASA is signed off, it maintains the same level of irregular expenditure as it had last year. What will happen to slide 27? It will become 29 plus whatever that figure was for PRASA, and then 2016-17 will become 45.5 plus whatever that figure is for PRASA for 2016-17. Are we on the same page, Jay? So I'm trying to do that reconciliation because I'm sure the 46.6 still rings in our heads, and I knew that members might wonder, why is it remaining the same as it was the previous year? That's the reason. PRASA is not included here. But you'll see, Chair, that as far as the breakdown of this irregular expenditure is concerned, there are certain provinces that are taking the lead in respect of the extent of the irregular expenditure as reported in the current year, and that is the picture, as you can see, on the right-hand side of page 27. If you look from the province at the top, as well as you look at the province at the bottom, you'll understand what I mean. Chair, let me just once more reassert the point here that at the point when we conclude on irregular expenditure, none of us know what is behind it. The only thing that we know is that we have identified a practice in the area of supply chain that is different from the prescribed rules. And we go through the audit process and we don't get satisfactory answers and we report it as irregular. As to who is behind it and what are the reasons behind it, is exactly the reason why you are reporting it to those that are charged with governance to pursue an investigation of the circumstances surrounding the fact that there was no need to advertise in certain instances, or there was just an acceptable increase of a scope of work without going out to competitive bidding. All of those factors during the audit in a 60-day process, it's very difficult to get to the bottom of what was behind it. And that's why the work that has been done by SCOPA, I think, in the last year, has started almost peeling the onion. I was here when SCOPA was interacting with the South African Broadcasting Corporation, where they peeled the onion of irregular expenditure. And I think that's the message that we are trying to communicate. It's not us. We don't have the power nor the capacity to get to the bottom of irregular expenditure. The people that do are the ones that exercise oversight. Ours is just to reflect on our findings per the audit of financial statements and leave it to yourselves to do the next thing. And I think you've already demonstrated when you interacted with the SAPC earlier this year that this thing is possible. You did it as well with SAA. I was also present when you did it here with SAA, where SAA brought a schedule of what was in their financial statements for both irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That's why we got to know that somebody who flies from here to Brazil and does not have the right papers but was made to leave here on the basis that their papers were right, when they get that side and they are being returned to South Africa, it then becomes the cost of SAA to bring them back. Hence, in the financial statements, that is shown, without us knowing the facts and the details, that is shown as wasteful and fruitless expenditure because we've got no way to account for what that expenditure was about. It is until the investigation is done, when they explain that this is someone who has been returned because of a discrepancy, because of the officials at customs here who cleared the person in terms of the papers, but when they got to that country, they were made to come back. Now, the point I'm trying to make is that nothing is yet conclusive as far as the audit is concerned on matters of irregular expenditure and so on, until such time a specific investigation on those items is done. Then we will know whether it was mere incompetence or it was somebody who was trying to achieve something other than what they are meant to do. And I think this one, Jay, just as I speak about it, is also linked to the efforts that we are busy with our standing committee on the AG to start looking at how much additional other work we who see the documentation, who see the transactions throughout the audit, how much additional other stuff can we do to make sure that it makes it a lot easier for those that are charged with oversight to hone in on the detail of what needs to be dealt with in order to address instances of irregular expenditure. And we found in many instances, Chair, that either you will not find the documentation pertaining to it if it's left for too long before it is investigated. And that is really the core message for us in terms of the area of irregular expenditure and the actions required from it. We share also in this slide presentation, and we'll go through more detail on it as well when we look at who are the highest contributors responsible for the bulk of this irregular expenditure. I no longer have a page reference here, Chair, but I think it's page 28. But it's not written on here. 28 and 29, we give some insight. You will recall that in a previous slide, the very previous one that I looked at, we set out to show which provinces have contributed how much in total in respect of irregular expenditure on page 27. And on page 28, 29, we give you a little bit more narrative behind the numbers. For example, you'll see the one for transport in KwaZulu-Natal, what were the circumstances that gave rise to the total amount of 3.9 billion of irregular expenditure compared to last year's 477. The same as the health in the Free State, which is now sitting at 3.5 billion of irregular expenditure compared to last year's 466. So these 28 and 29, Chair, is more the detail, and a lot more detail behind these will also surface in the general report once it is complete. Gauteng Health on the next page, Education, Eastern Cape, Health, Limpopo Roads Agency. The infrastructure, health, and education, Chair, as I said earlier on, if you look at that correlation of the outcomes of those three high-spending departments, many of their departments are now starting to feature with high levels of irregular expenditure. And that's what we meant when we said that the resources and the finances in those portfolios sometimes lend themselves to a lot of deviations from the prescribed rules. And I think the split, what we've given here is not the only ones, it's probably the top contributors. I think we've identified the top 10 contributors, which contributed about 53% of the total irregular expenditure. It gives us a sense that if we use the 80-20 rule, we don't have to chase everybody. We can chase these big ones, the ones that have got a big impact on delivery of health, on delivery of education, or delivery of infrastructure. And I'm sure if we can hit irregular expenditure for these ones in one go, it'll probably take the significant portion of that irregular expenditure in areas that are predominantly vulnerable, because it's easier to have these kinds of irregular expenditures if you have to contend with a district office and then a district office and a regional office and then a provincial office and then many other players in the process. One can imagine how many hands have to complete a transaction before the whole transaction is complete. And I think some of those elements where one looks at education and health start to raise their hand. It could be that there are many people who do what they are told to do and do it the way they are told to do it, without sometimes supervision, but also without accountability. One would imagine, if one looks at all the 9 provinces across the country, there's just so much that happens in the health sector, so much that happens in the education sector, so many people that have got responsibility for different things. But at the same time, there are many vacancies as well in a number of those places where the people who were meant to do the work are not on the seats doing the work. Hence the repetition of these things in that area. All I'm suggesting here, Chair, is that when we look at these particular departments in particular, we need to also to think carefully about behind the money, what are the things that are influencing the kind of outcomes that we see. On page 30, as far as the status of supply chain management is concerned, looking at the findings on SCM and year-on-year analysis over the last 4 years, Chair, indicates that there is no improvement of any significance Instead, we are having lesser and lesser number of departments and entities with no findings in the area of supply chain management. So in addition to those qualified areas, Chair, that we pointed a finger at, supply chain management still continues to be the albatross. The instances and the areas where these findings are predominant, as you can see on page 31, leading the pack is the fact that supply chain gets deviated from day one. No quotes are invited, competitive bidding not invited, preference point system not applied, tax affairs of those suppliers not carefully scrutinized. And I think we've seen examples in the past of major contracts where this was not done and there was a big fallout. Inadequate contract performance monitoring, as well as declarations of interest not being submitted. So those are the common features that you'll see, Chair, in each of the provinces as well as in the general report. The area of the public service regulations, Chair, where the amendments that were processed in terms of the Public Administration Management Act prohibited certain categories of activity by employees that are engaged in the state, we have found that there are still quite a number of instances where this is still a feature in the environment. And Chair, I think the link to this obviously is that in many instances where there are these potential conflicts, one will also see a growing trend of deviations from supply chain as well, because there's obviously a potential conflict of interest with people who have got interest in contracts and who are trading while they are sitting behind the desk processing the documents that will give rise to a trade. So that's really the point here, so that at least as we think about it, we are not imposing a ban on people to do work if they are allowed to. But those that are sitting behind the back, the chair, processing the documents, if they have an interest in the outcome of the documents that they are processing, the chances are that you are going to have high levels of supply chain not being observed. Fraud and consequence management, Chair, that one again, investigations commence and they take too long before they are even completed. And the trouble with this also, if one links it to that observation of the root causes about instability in certain key positions as a root cause of this, imagine a situation where an accounting officer has instituted an investigation within 2 months and then in month number 3 they are gone. The chances are that the replacing accounting officer is unlikely to prioritize the investigation that was done by A in the previous period, which may have been the reason why A is no longer there. So these investigations can go on forever and ever and ever. And that's not the point that we are raising. When we say there are no consequences here, it's not that investigations don't commence. In certain instances, they commence, but there are many disrupting elements that cause these investigations not to go very far. Either the documentation that they were hoping to get is not there, but the people who can help in finding some of the evidence may also not be there. And I think the issue of frequent movement, instability, investigations that get commenced but never completed is also a very deep issue that will cause nothing of this fraud and consequent management to see the light of day. Because I am not going to get into a department where someone was asked to leave, and then the first priority on day one when I arrive is to pursue that investigation that could have caused them to leave. It's just not possible. And in fact, even after 6 months, they may have new priorities that they have to look after in terms of their mandate as the accounting officer at that time. So I think when we think about this area, we've got to also think about what are these practices that cause this disruption internally, because it's not really that in some instances there's no interest in pursuing these investigations, but it's difficult for someone to start an investigation that was 35% of the way, and then they have no idea where to start, and there's nobody encouraging them to, because they were not there when all this happened. Right, Chair, I think I said a lot here about those issues of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. I'd like now to quickly jump to slide number 37, and I'm sure if the other slides that I've jumped have got specific questions, I can deal with them when we interact. But the status of internal controls, Chair, as we have often highlighted, is also another key element that needs to be looked at, where we look at the role of leadership, and we'll just show now in subsequent slides who are these people that we are referring to. The financial and performance management disciplines, and that is the area of managing the finance departments with people that have requisite competencies, as well as people who have got technical knowledge of the stuff that they are reporting on, both in the financial numbers as well as with the performance. And then the last one is the governance, which is the supervisory activities that are performed by the likes of your committee, as well as the portfolio committees that operate within the different departments. So the status of these, Chair, is clearly that the area of risk in terms of all these three elements has at least subsided. If you look at the red together with the yellow is that it says it's of concern, but the progress that was meant to be achieved is not achieved. That's what we are saying here, it's of concern. When we say it's good, it means that the people who are in these key roles are doing what is expected of them in terms of the internal control environment. Information technology controls, Chair, is an area that we have not given too much attention, I think, in the oversight side of things. But one can imagine a situation where if the information technology controls are not in place, meaning that people can at any time find access to an information technology environment, it's almost like opening the door into the vault at the bank. And so if that door is open, then it'll be easy for them to take as many notes as possible inside the vault. And that's what the value of information technology controls is about in the context of an audit. Because it says that if these information technology controls are strong, then somebody will be prevented from coming into the yard. They will be stopped at the perimeter fence. But if these information technology controls are weak, as they are depicted here, you might already find them in the kitchen. Effectively, that's really what this is about. It's about managing people at the perimeter fence versus managing them while they are in the kitchen, because then in the kitchen there are so many things they can take because they have had access to the kitchen, whereas if they were prevented at the perimeter fence, the chances are that they won't even know what's in the cupboards. Time to drink water now. Chair, I spoke about the role of leadership in that other slide where we showed 50% green. These are the people that we are talking about, senior management, accounting officers, executive authorities, as well as the second level of assurance, which is your internal independent assurance and oversight, as well as your oversight of the external parties, public accounts committees, and portfolio committees. That's the status of the effectiveness. It's clear from looking at this that the people who do their best in trying to support the development of good accounting and financial management practices are largely your internal audit and audit committee. This has been a consistent picture. They've been found to be doing what they are doing, but the disappointing part of it is when senior management does not respond to the findings and the recommendations that are raised by internal audit and the audit committee, these outcomes are unlikely to change because these are the people who are supposed to do the work of fixing, while the others who are seen to be effective are the ones that are responsible for overseeing them. I spoke about the root causes, Chair, on the second last slide. The response level being slow in improving key controls. I've spoken to one element of it, which is about the slow progress with investigations, among others. The issue of instability or vacancies has also got an impact, continues to have an impact on these outcomes, as well as the absence of consequences for poor performance and transgressions is another key root cause that we have picked up, Chair. Chair, that's the last slide. I'm not going to go back to this one. I think we have spoken about this C equals to M plus D minus A. I'm hoping that the members still remember that formula, which in clear terms really is about saying that those that have got monopoly of power to control the different decisions and flow of resources and apply levels of discretion beyond their allocated responsibility or delegation of responsibility. But if on top of that there is also lack of accountability, the chances are that the instances of corrupt activity are likely to increase. And that's what that slide is about. It's about saying that the discretion, which is the D, is the part that continues to feature prominently in these slide presentations, because so many levels of discretion without supervision are being abused in the system, hence the type of outcomes that we have, which make the environment vulnerable to instances of corrupt activity. Chair, that is the long and short of our high-level presentation for this time around. As you know, we are planning to finalize the general report and publish it beginning of November, and this is a stage in the process to highlight some of the key features that you will find in that report, so that when you prepare your oversight work, at least you've got a context and an insight into what is contained in those financial statements. Back to you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Auditor General. As always, very clear. You're correct. Actually, ourselves, tomorrow, we are doing our what we call strike plan review. But actually, it's reviewing our APPs and setting new APPs. But we colloquially call it strike plan review. That's how we call it. Well, what I'm going to do, Comrade Vincent, you know, you oscillate between being a member of the committee and being chair of the other committee. I'll give the two of you the first option if there are issues you want to raise pointedly, and then I'll allow comrades to raise issues if they have. Safe to say, AG, for myself, and I just want to state it as strongly as we did last year, the very issue you started with, the issue of contestation. I think it is something that we do need to talk to quite strongly. If you want good audit outcomes, just do your work. You can't use lawyers or threats to achieve those kind of outcomes. And if this institution is compromised, then we were doomed as a country. And the sheer audacity to demand a good audit outcome, it's the temerity to do that, I think it's quite galling, to say the least. And I do think that we do need to continue to put our foot very strongly against this kind of practices. And I was just thinking, as you were, you know, talking, employees who continue to do business with the state, even got new tenders thereafter, I think we may need to see how we step in to seek accountability. I suppose the Department of Public Service and Administration might be the right door to knock at. The issue of irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I think if PRASA remains where it was, if you add PRASA comrades from 46, I'm sure we are now moving towards 60 billion rands, or above 60 billion rands in terms of irregular expenditure. Irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It will be interesting. Comrades will recall that we still have a date with National Treasury to discuss their report on expansions and deviations. It will be interesting to check how much of those, in terms of those long sheets that we had, how much of it contributed to this irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The issue of outstanding reports, I think it is linked to the issue of contestations, but you said there are three reports that were actually outstanding from the previous financial year. It would be interesting to check if are they from the national departments or are they from provincial departments, so that we could locate with the Speaker's office exactly what is it that is happening or going on. And last but not least, the issues around IT control. I do agree that you have been raising it now for the last couple of years. And I think as SCOPA, we've spoken to it, but I do think it does require much, much, much more focus, because a lot of the things we're doing now are IT-based. So if your IT security is not up to scratch, it poses a lot of problems. We don't as yet have a minister of cyber security like our neighbors up north, but it is a serious, serious challenge. I'm sure we're aware the American Congress is seized to how Putin assisted Trump to win the elections using IT. And the slide that you glossed over, which I thought you would probably sit on, is, I'm sure, the last but one, assurance providers and the role that we play ourselves, portfolio committees and public accounts committees. I'm sure it is an area that we may want to have further engagement, and I'm sure the House Chair and the Committee of Chairpersons should interest themselves in that one. If we are not doing our work of oversight as adequately as we should, then we're also contributing to some of these things. How do we, and I would imagine that office should seize itself with that question. How does it ensure that the committees under it do their work so that next when you report, were able to demonstrate some movement? But those were the few things that I would want to touch on. I don't want them responded to straight away. I would like to allow comrades to raise their issues. Comrade Posa, I'll start with you. Comrade Vincent, if there's any, but I would give you at the end if there's anything you would like to raise, and then we can allow comrades to raise any issues there.
Okay, thank you so much, Chair, for inviting us to be part of this meeting, whereby we have just received a report from the Auditor General, Auditor General's office. Well, harsh reality is that this government is about the National Development Plan. Now, if I may refer to your formula there, your plan, do, check, and act, which then confirms that this government has a plan. Now, it is a plan that is expected to be implemented by government entities, state-owned enterprises, and in the implementation stage, they have programs and the budgets that are aligned to those programs. And indeed, at the center of the program implementation and also the successful implementation of these programs will depend on good governance. Now, I said good governance, but also good financial and non-financial performance. Now, the report that the Auditor General has given us a highlight on where there was good governance, where there was compliance with the law, but also where there were serious wasteful expenditure and unauthorized expenditure and fruitless expenditure. And in terms of the state capacity, the officials are concerned, where, for instance, in the precautionary suspensions, where those have been delayed and how they've impacted on the implementation of the program. I'm just commenting because all that I'm trying to say is that we have information now that can be of good use in our oversight function. So we have information. It's information that we need. We came here, you know, very thirsty for this information. We now have this information. So thank you very much. What is that, General? It is information that we will use, and I hope we will then be able to also do our quality. It will add up to our quality oversight. We have nothing to complain about. We have information in our hands to go and make use of in our oversight and make an impact in our work. Thank you very much. Just a comment.
All right. No, that's fine. If you can switch off the mic. Comrade Vincent?
No, Chair. I don't have anything. I'll follow up on what you were saying, Chair. And I think really it's a matter that we must discuss. There's just two points, Chair. You know, the court challenges or disagreements I'm not sure if the AG is able to give us the reasons for it. I know you're saying court challenges, but if you said to us there was a challenge because they disagreed with how you classified irregular or fruitless or wasteful, it's going to help us, Chair. It doesn't have to be done now. I'm just saying it's something that we'll have to think about as Parliament. And the late submissions, you know, there's no penalty for late submissions, Chairperson. Now, somewhere here, if memory serves me right, for instance, there was a late submission or a non-submission of mango. As we speak today, mango is in trouble. Now, these are the real things that are happening. So I don't know, Chair, that... And it's not the AG. I think Chairperson Posa and us at Scopa, and maybe even the chair of chairs, are going to have to think of how we deal with it. The AG can only raise it, but it's how we deal with it. I'm just using that as a real example. I mean, all the areas that we've got non-submissions are the problems. SAA, Mango, all those. So I just think, Chair, that there's something we need to do further than that. And then the final one has been my bugbear. I don't know, AG. I think I raised it when you sit with me in the other committee. And I don't know how appropriation deals with it. You know this thing that you call irregular expenditure? You are saying, not you, I'm saying all of us are saying it's contravention with the law. Most of it is because supply chain management prescripts have not been complied with. And we call it irregular expenditure, and it's running up to billions of rands. I think between the appropriations, ourselves, and somewhere else, we need to relook at that thing. It's just too nice to call it irregular. It's breaking the law. So why do you call it irregular if you're breaking the law? So AG, I'm not sure if you categorize it that way because you are forced to by the PFMA or whatever the case might be, but I would urge for us to maybe relook at these headings because unless the headings are harsh and bite us in the face, what's the problem? I think we must call fraud fraud, we must call theft theft, and then maybe it'll have a greater impact here than we have it here. So those were probably the few comments that I made, and I do think, Chair, you're correct when you say when we do our strategy, we need to look at what do we as Scopa, like we did last year, irregular expenditure, what is it that we focus on? So I welcome the Auditor General's report, but I think he's too nice, to be quite honest. I really think that, and I know the AG doesn't get involved in politics, but calling it irregular when it's theft, I don't know, but we'll talk behind the door. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Thanks, comrades. Comrades, any issues? Well, if there are none, it's fine. We can break. Let me see who would want to... Okay. We'll start with you, Tim, and then Mente, and then yes, you, comrade, right at the back. And then let's be brief, pointed, and then I'll allow all of us to talk, and then you can respond to the first thing.
Thank you, Chair. if I can just refer the AG to page 4, which is what the AG said is most alarming, and it's certainly alarming to me as well, is the issue of contestation. Under the types of contestations, AG, you list a couple there. The three that are of the greatest concern to me, because the first three, you know, people are allowed to ask questions, people are allowed to go to court if they want to. But what now starts to border on criminal is attempts to interfere in audits, including questioning methodology or pushing for different wording in audit reports, personal threats and intimidation, and delays in not providing documentation evidence. AG, you can't obviously list who was involved in that, but I'm sure that you could provide us with a report. And I'm pretty sure my colleagues in SCOPA would like to see a report where you specifically tell us which entities, which departments involved themselves in those last two activities. If we have departments and entities out there who are attempting to interfere in audit, that's a major problem. Just like my colleague Vincent has said, we must call something what it is. Attempting to interfere with an audit is a hectic problem. Personal threats and intimidation is just cannot be tolerated. So I'm sure that we would like to act and like to call those people to account for their actions, because it all relates to public accounts and it falls within our mandate. So can you please provide us with a full report on those incidences? You've listed them here, so they must be on record somewhere. Page, your spider diagram. Thank you for the spider diagram. It's always very useful. Fraud and consequences. As you just help me to make sure I'm right here, the black line or the dark blue, whatever it is, black line, refers to the current year under review. And if I look at fraud and consequences, does that mean that 60% or just over 60%, maybe even close to, whatever, just over 60%, is that 60% fraud? Or is it 60% consequences as a result of fraud? Can you just clarify that and clarify if just over 60% is correct? Because all the other work we do, we don't see 60% disciplinary and criminal follow-up on malfeasance. We don't see it at all. We see nothing being done, and we get very concerned about it. So can you just qualify that 60%, explain exactly what it means, and then tell us if it's right, because all the other work we do doesn't seem to support that. Thank you, Jay.
Thanks. Comment.
Thanks, Chair. Chairperson, the first one was also on page 4. Just wanting to check with the Auditor General if they have criminal cases opened, because I would presume that if ever they don't want to change the finding that they write on the report, there is some harsh intimidation that happens at the floor of a department. If there's such, did they open criminal cases against those people? Because that's very criminal. It's not allowed. And then the last one is just to check with, in particular with CASA and SA Express, because they are the most problematic people in terms of money of South Africa. Did they give you anything, or you have listed them in on page 21 as the audits that were outstanding. Did they give you anything at all? Is there any interaction? Are you happy with the process that they are doing in order for your office to get the necessary documents? Is there something happening between you and their offices, or there's nothing at all? Thank you.
All right. Yes, yes, come on.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think colleagues have actually raised some of the things they've touched on some of the things that I'm going to I want to raise, but I'm just going to speak on it in general, no specific area in particular. But I do want to start with the issue of the contestations also. Everyone has been raising it. Just to share also that, you know, at the level of the Appropriations Standing Committee, I was actually surprised when more than one department, when we asked questions, were saying that in as much as this audit outcome is this way, they're still engaging the Auditor General, and it's going to change. You know, that type of thing, and it's becoming a trend that they say they're still going to negotiate. Is there something like that when you've actually pronounced on the audit outcome and then people say that, come and say to the committee that they are still negotiating, they don't say negotiate, but they say they are still engaging the AG. Now today the issue of litigations and things comes up. If you can just please speak to that. Then the other thing is the issue of, you know, this thing of setting targets and non-achievement, and I just looked at the percentage of targets that were not achieved. For me, people are just not serious with their work. They're just not serious. You can't set so many targets, because at times you ask them, why do you set so many targets when you're not going to achieve? Or they spend all the funds, but they don't achieve even half of the targets. So it's something that we've also identified, that these are some of the things that are happening. And in terms of the, okay, maybe I must just say that in terms of the of compliance with legislation, honestly, I'm not sure if people, again, are serious. I mean, we've got very clear legislation, SCM, and other related legislation. But now, even when you ask people questions, it's like, you know, it's like they're just establishing a new department because they're not building on the knowledge that you expect them to have already. It's like we're going to be training people, we're going to be doing this and that, instead of saying these are the reasons why this has not been done. But it's like they are going to start afresh. Every time you ask them a question, they're going to start doing this and that. And that is why I am saying that I don't know how serious people are and whether or not they know the role of the AG in the first place. Because I imagine that if they knew what the role of the AG is, then they would understand. And because over the years, I've never heard of anything like people, when they dispute, they come to the committee and tell them that, no, you wait, we're still negotiating, it's going to change. And at the same time, they're not. And the level of regression in many aspects, which I'm not going to go into detail, it's just those things that I wanted to actually speak to. And the issue of irregular expenditure for me, it's like, you know, it's not something that happens by mistake. It's just that it's normal because it looks like they just go on and spend irregularly. And the answers that you always get, of course, are never satisfactory. And I'm talking from the level of the committee. But they're never satisfactory because they don't give you an answer that you can say, oh, even though irregular expenditure is wrong, but they had this reason, they don't have, but they would want to convince you. Thank you very much.
AG?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me say, as far as the issue of the targets and achievement against these targets, I think the tools at the disposal of a portfolio committee, in my assessment, are possibly what could be the most effective route to pursue here. Because portfolio committees have got quarterly review meetings with departments and accounting officers who bring to them presentations of various projects that they are busy with and are implementing. And if one looks at that loop, it is in that portfolio committee also that the plan or the APP annual performance plan is presented. And I think, I don't know what the answer is, but I think the place where a more rigorous conversation about the achievement of targets could happen is possibly at a portfolio committee level, because there you've got the people who work with that particular portfolio over a period of time and will know what are the priority projects. They even visit them as well. I mean, if the example of the Northern Cape Mental Facility is anything to go by, I'm sure there's many visits that were there, Chair, including not the most recently. Portfolio committees, I think, could give more in terms of this, because when it comes to the achievement and targets, what is written on paper sometimes is one thing, but the real evidence of the qualitative delivery on the ground is another. And I think auditors do not always have the opportunity to go and see for themselves what has been laid out there. It's easy to reach a conclusion if there's already 25 million on the tab, but they are still busy with clearing ground. That could be one way a portfolio committee would know that there's too much on the tab compared to what they've physically inspected there. It could be that some of that money was spent on other stuff prior to the project really commencing. So I would say that the issue of targets and achievements, for us, we will continue to make the inquiry, but the most effective side of it, I think, is to raise the flag with portfolio committees on these matters, especially for the large projects that they would know about because they would have approved them at the time when the annual performance plan was submitted. The issue of signed audits and auditees claiming that they are still engaging, I guess the quick answer to this is that the engagement with a current year audit ends at the point when a signature is appended. So I guess some of them might just be spinning it. You know, it's always easy to say, no, I'm busy engaging with the auditor on this. But the bottom line is that the engagement stops once we put signature on the report for that year. We can still engage about what you must do next year in respect of the matter that tripped you this year. But there's nobody who's going to lift a signature from the report and say, okay, fine, based on your engagement, let's review the report. The report, once it gets signed, it's based on evaluation of all available evidence at that point. And the auditors express an opinion based on that information. If somebody is still figuring out some other engagement, it's probably for next year, not for the current year's report that has been signed. So that's the long and short answer to that one. Criminal cases for threats and contestations. These ones, as far as the issue of criminal cases for them are concerned, they have not reached that level to warrant us to now go to court, because one of the things that is a dominant or an inherent feature of an audit is that the auditee, who knows all of the explanations and representations that auditors are asking, the auditee ought to provide that information to the auditors and report to the auditors on it. And when we get these contestations, we know that sometimes they are part of the audit, and we deal with them in that context. But there are many ones which are just beyond, as we're saying on this page 4 of the slide, that are just beyond the contestation for an audit. And these are the ones that, Honorable Member, you have asked for us to provide a report. And I'm sure we can provide that report, because there are many instances that we can share in a report which indicate that these are just extraordinary contestations. They've got nothing to do with the item that we have picked up in the audit. It's just that somebody has made a commitment that they are going to deliver a clean audit. They didn't do the work, and they know that they are going to have a tough conversation either departmentally or elsewhere if they didn't achieve that. And it's really a case of, I'm going to do everything I can to try and make sure that I maintain that audit outcome that I had, despite the material findings the auditors are picking up. And that's the issue that we are pushing back on to say, sorry, we're not going to say yes to that. So we haven't really taken it to that level. And it's when we start seeing, I mean, one of the examples, if you think about it, you would have a department that is busy implementing a particular project, but because they themselves do not have the capacity to do it, then they give it to a third-party service provider. Then when it goes into the third-party service provider, then they say, no, 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 but that money that was given to the third-party service provider is no longer subject to the rules that it would have been subject to had it been spent in our own hands. Now then they box up with legal interpretations of all that stuff. And we say, no, the money is the same money. It came from the National Revenue Fund. It doesn't matter who you assigned to implement it on your behalf. Those are the type of issues where they are coming with funny logic that is sometimes, loaded with legalistic stuff, which tries to deviate from the substance of the issues that were identified in the audit and is starting to now elevate the legal form of things. There's a difference between the legal form of things and the substance of the economic activity that has been created as a result of the flow of money between two people. And an audit is normally focused on the substance of the transaction rather than the legal form of the transaction that would have been entered into between two people. An example of this. It may happen that under normal circumstances when you enter into a lease arrangement with somebody, you just pay rental. But if you look deeper into that contract, you might find that there are certain clauses that indicate that you ought to have that property on your balance sheet as a finance lease, as an example. And those are the type of issues that we normally contest about. Some of them are real, but some of them, as I said, are abusive. So it's a combination. We still have to do an analysis because we started seeing a growing trend of this for the first time when we reported it last year. And more we're starting to see that now because people are taking note. In the past, they used to sit back and do nothing about findings because they knew nobody's going to follow up on them. And I think the other positive we must pick up is that maybe there is some level of effective follow-up that is happening and that is insisting that they shall do that which has to be done. And of course, for their own sake, at that level in finance as well as in accounting officer roles, they know that something is going to bite. So there are two elements to this. There's the abusive part of it, but I think there's also the welcome part of it, which is about saying you don't have to ignore this audit finding just because you think nothing is going to happen. Something is going to happen. I think for us, that is an ingredient that needs to be encouraged to make sure that in the future, nobody can sneeze at audit outcomes just because they think nothing is going to happen. So there's two elements to it, I guess, the point I'm making. Eugene, you're going to help me with the fraud and consequences 60%, as well as the PRASA and SA Express ones, because you're much closer to those ones. If you can just do those, I'll just finish off the others, and then you can take over from here on. Chair, the report that you referred to, Honorable President, will work on it. We'll work on it and see whether there's any possibility that we can surface some of these issues in the best way we can. I think also it's important also to look at how to report this, because it's normally the experience of the auditors in the interaction that they are elevating to us. And I guess to report in that context may be a bit tricky, but we must find a way to elevate those type of issues. Not that we don't believe them, what they say, because otherwise we wouldn't have written it here. But I think we need to make sure that if we are going to share it in the form of a report, we absolutely are certain about the stuff that we are putting in there. So we'll come back to you on that one. The outstanding reports for previous financial years, Eugene, you can help on that. Chair, overall, I guess the issues that you have raised also regarding the priority that needs to be given to areas of IT controls in particular, I just wanted to expand on that, Chair, and say, you know, when many people are working in a finance department and an administration department, there's always a temptation for some because they've got too many things to remember. Sometimes they don't want to always remember their password because it normally expires before they know it. So they always have a temptation to write it down. And if you go to any administration environment, sometimes if you have an opportunity to visit the departments you normally visit, it would sometimes help if you did a walkabout around those desks in some places. You'll see dates of birth and this and that on pieces of paper. Now, that's a key to the vault, because the people who know best can figure out
that this date of birth is not just for nothing. It could be somebody's password who's got many other passwords with many bank accounts that they don't want to forget. But this one at least is a work one. They can write it on a piece of paper and leave it at a desk. Now, that's a license into the finances of the institution if you are not careful about it. But somebody who's clever or who's determined to break the system can do all sorts of trial and error on your date of birth and other combination of things. I mean, some of these passwords, they come as alphanumeric, others, they are just numeric. People can easily guess them. Once you get into that system, Chair, if it happens to be an electronic payment system and you've got access to the master files that set up a payment, and you know that in that department there are no real accounting reconciliations between the bank and the accounting records, what would stop someone from arriving there when no one else is at work, using that particular specified laptop of that individual and punching all sorts of details of a non-existent supplier with a non-existent invoice and a non-existent amount and pressing the send button for payment into the bank? The bank is none the wiser when it receives the instruction because it thinks it comes from an authentic source. That's the risk in the IT environment, because the IT environment is the environment that protects the general ledger, that protects the cash book. Now, if that access point is vulnerable, you immediately have access to the bank just by punching that particular password. The transaction could be a devastating amount. It could be anything. And that's, I think, the essence of the IT controls. It's not the nice-to-haves in the IT thing, the cloud technology and that type of stuff. It's the basic stuff about, are we sure that the people who access these routines within the financial management discipline, are we sure that they are the ones that are authorized? Does anybody make sure that there are exception reports that are checked when they are thrown out of the system? If there are no exception reports, how do you know somebody was attempting to do something fraudulent and did not succeed? Those are the type of controls I think we are putting emphasis on. And our office has done a significant amount of work in looking at the analysis of this particular area. And in fact, in the audit of SAA, as an example, we were in no doubt in our minds that we needed a significant number of people to test the IT environment. Because you can imagine when you buy an airline ticket, there's agents, there's all sorts of people who interface electronically with that environment. You seldom go to a place where you're carrying cash and you buy it at an airline ticket. You normally buy it in these places that interface with the airline electronically. And the issue is, to what extent are the controls within that information technology environment able to protect that institution from being abused in terms of its revenue? And it's very complex. It requires people with proper IT audit training to be able to manage and follow through those interfaces. But in other environments, it can be as easy as a municipality that has got a basic accounting system that can be accessed by whoever has got the access to the passwords and can access the bank accounts of that municipality and take money without being noticed. So there are variations to it as well. And I think if at any point we need to share the detail behind the findings overall, sector-wise, and the IT environment, I'm sure we can do it as a trigger to set you up to focus on the key issues and the IT controls. Eugene, can you help with the two, the PRASA, the SA Express audits, as well as the fraud consequence matter?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the first question that I'm going to deal with is the one that was raised by the Chair with regards to the three audits that were also outstanding in the prior year, as to whether those audits fall within the national sphere or it falls within provinces. If we look at slide 19, we can see that there is 23 of the 26 audits that are outstanding, 23 fall under the national sphere, whilst only 3 falls within the provinces. And those 3 that fall within the provinces, 2 being in KZN, which is Itala, both of those audits were finalized in the prior, and we have subsequently signed off on those 2 audits. And the one audit that is in the Western Cape, which is the Department of Agriculture, we had concluded it last year, and it's in the process of being concluded as we speak. So all the three that were outstanding last year belong in the national sphere. And I think the one that is worth highlighting is the one that is called the Compensation Commissioner for Occupational Diseases. This entity last provided us a set of financial statements to audit in 2012-13 because there are issues within the entity in terms of it being able to determine the provision for compensation commission claims. So that is the typical entity that we have amongst the three. So that's the nature of the entities that have been outstanding for a while. Then with regards to the question around the spider diagram, which is slide 6, which talks to fraud and consequences as to what that 60-odd percent depicts, I would like through you, Chair, to bring the member's attention to slide 33. On top of slide 33, that's where we indicate the 64% right at the top corner of that slide. What basically that means is that 64% of the audits that we looked at had in place systems for them to investigate any issues of fraud that have been highlighted during the course of the audit. And I think as the AG did indicate in his presentation that these, in our experience, are taking too long, the investigations themselves, and also these investigations, some of them in terms of our experience are going through the motions. And the reason that we come to that kind of a conclusion is that if you look at slide 35, which is then what the honorable member was talking to, in our view, in terms of the experience, when you're sitting at SCOPA or at any other portfolio committee, where you are looking at the outcomes or the lack of outcomes of these investigations that basically get started. Because if you look at the graphic that we have here, and you look at the irregular expenditure one, the very first one, there we are saying that of the 91 million rand of irregular expenditure, 91 billion, sorry, of irregular expenditure that has been accumulated over the years, we find that 81 billion of it doesn't get attended to. In other words, it's either not written off, it's not recovered from anyone, or it's not condoned. And if you look at that very same graphic, only 80 million rand of the 91 billion rand of irregular expenditure from what we've looked at is actually acted upon or is recovered from someone. So that is the linkage in terms of where we're saying the processes do get started, there's activity, but that activity doesn't really result in any tangible outcomes. On the question of PRASA and SA Express, with regards to PRASA, we haven't received any set of financial statements. We had started the audit process in the normal course of our audit. We do start auditing way before the end of March, depending on the size of the entity, and PRASA will be typically that type of an entity. And with the expectation that we'll be getting a set of financial statements at the end of May, in the case of PRASA, we were not really given a final set or an approved set of financial statements. And we continued doing the audit on the assumption that ultimately we will be given a set approved by a board. But towards the end of July, we made the decision to withdraw our team because we were not getting anywhere closer to being provided a set of financial statements. So the situation hasn't changed as yet. We still haven't been given a set, because at this point in time there isn't a board in place within PRASA. When it comes to SA Express, This audit was only finalized earlier this year, because this is one of the entities that had to delay their financial statements because they were resolving the issues of going concern. And as a result, they could only provide us with the financial statements for 16-17, sometime in July 2017, and which basically means that we are considering those financial statements and we're still in process of auditing SA Express. Thank you.
All right. But I would imagine that in the absence of a board, the CEO of the entity assumes the responsibility. So the absence of a board in PRASA cannot be an excuse for not providing you with a set of financial statements. But that's fine. I think for your part, you have given us the explanation. Comrade Kakana, Comrade Kuno.
No, thanks, Chair. Mine is not a question, but a comment. Because if you look at these litigations and the contestations, my suspicion is people are running away from accountability. They don't want to provide us with information because they know that in these hearings we are using this information that is to press them to account. But I think we need to send a message that is very clear to them that unfortunately they are worsening the situation. Because if they don't provide us with information, we are going to investigate that is on us. The information ourselves, and that is not going to improve or to assist them, that is in any case. Now, because if you look at this whole thing, it's not that they are undermining, that is the AG. Actually, they are undermining Parliament. It is our responsibility to make sure that when they appear before us, particularly those who think that they can take the AG on litigation or maybe to challenge some of that is the findings from the AG, that unfortunately they are not going to achieve what they think that they are going to achieve. The responsibility is very simple, is they need to account for the money that they were given, and if not, obviously, We are definitely going to focus more on consequences that is this financial year. And I think in our discussion tomorrow in the strategic session, those are the areas that we need to isolate and focus particularly that is on those issues. Thank you, Chair.
Comrade Kuno.
I want to align myself with what Comrade Kikana has said. I mean, we've always emphasized the fact that the AG is our primary stakeholder, and we have to make sure that there are consequences, and I think that's what we are pushing for. And I agree with the AG when he says that after a signature is attached, then it means both parties are in agreement with the audit outcome. But you'll find that, Chairperson, in some of the meetings where there are disputes, and they are, I can't say Auditor General, but the representatives from the AG's office, they will say, some of them will say that, yes, we are busy with this particular dispute. So I wanted the AG to explain that, because they do say that. I think it's in different occasions. I think the lady at the back also said that at some stage that they are busy with those investigations, because my understanding was that if both the accounting officer and the AG has signed an annual report, then it's binding. It means whoever that signed that, they are agreeing to each and everything that's said there. So that was the question. But my last question, the other thing, Chairperson, that I wanted the AG to help us with, maybe when we are dealing with
sharing of notes, you know, this outsourcing part where you find that a department has outsourced just to, for them to dodge accounting at the end of the day, and they think that it's not part of, I mean, it's public money and it has to be accounted for appropriately. I hope that in part of information sharing, we'll get more of this so that we can deal with that as Parliament. And maybe if there's anything that lacks in terms of the PFMA, let's try to find a way of dealing with that appropriately. But Chairperson, my last question would be, I was looking at our reports that we are going to take to the House later on today. The question is not actually on what the AG has reported, but one of the recommendations that we have on unauthorized expenditure from Departments of Sports, Arts and Culture, no, Sports and Recreation, sorry, It's the finding of unauthorized expenditure to the amount of 674,674, that amount be expunged from the financial records since it was a misclassification. So I just want to, you know, because as we are pressing hard to make sure that they do come in account and you find this, you know, part of problems, then it becomes a problem to us as well, as members of SCOPA, as members of what is the other committee, SCOEC, that we are part of, and we don't know how to define that exactly. So if the AG could just speak to that. Thanks, Chair.
Right. I think we would want to bring the session to a close. AG, I'll get back to you, but I'll check with the two comrades. Just to say the issue that Comrade Kuno is talking about of sports and recreation, it's a bit old. I think the classification was done by the department itself, accepted by... Yeah, I'm just talking to this very specific one. The generic issue, I think they'll respond to. And we had engagements with them, I think, in the fourth parliament, you know, and in the deliberations, it became clear that it is not. But the process of then expunging it as an unauthorized expenditure must go through what we're supposed to do today, instead of just saying it is and then we leave it at that. I just think... AG, I don't know if you comment on this. You spoke about project management, the issue around delays and the impact that they have on escalating costs. I'm not sure if it is an issue, Mr. Sack, that, you know, can be isolated, because I'm not sure whether if you have delays, does it come through as irregular expenditure or not. It might not come as regular expenditure, but as an item of expenditure and how it impacts on the finances, I think it is an issue of critical importance, you know, to look at and isolate it and deal with it. But maybe the Comrade Posa and Comrade Vincent, is there anything you may want to say? Because when the AG finishes, I think we would want to bring it to a close. Comrade Vincent, is Comrade Posa.
After these reports have been sent to the departments would then be expected to develop an action plan to address all those weaknesses that would have been identified. Now, I just want to know if there is any cooperation, because we then rely on those action plans and the implementation so that there can be an improvement on governance issues.
Thank you, Chair. The last question. There are a number of departments that commit and implement their action plans. And you would find also that the actions that they are taking in order to clear the audit outcome might not just be in 1 year, because it might require certain things to be done in the system and that. And the other extreme is the ones that commit, but always prioritize other things. So it's always a mixed bag in terms of their reaction. But certainly, I think there are a number that have shown improvements purely because the accounting officers and the CFO have insisted on clearing those issues. But it's not the majority. It's only just a few. Coming back to the issue that I raised earlier on regarding the signature on the report, I still want to reassert the point that when the audit report is signed, it is normally a confirmation that even if we do not fully agree. Hence, I think the issue about, okay, we will still deal with this issue next year. I think that's the emphasis, next year. It can't be saying we are still dealing with this issue for this year when the signature is on the report. It cannot be. It can only be we will listen to your story and your evidence about this matter in the subsequent audit because you are not convinced by what you are saying now. So if you think about it, the accounting officer on their side still believe, because they don't really have an independent signature, they still believe that they are right. So they will continue to make it sound like they are still right, despite the signature of the auditors. And I think that's where the issue is. But then when the auditors say, yes, you are busy investigating this, they are right as well, because they are not investigating this thing about this year now. They are investigating it, looking forward to the subsequent year if there's an opportunity to fix it in the subsequent year. And then I think the chair has dealt with the other specific matter. I wouldn't have known much about the sports and recreation specific matter, but thank you, Chair, for providing the clarity on that. I hope Honorable Hono is now happy. Thank you, Chair.
Right. Thanks very much, comrades, and thanks, Auditor General and your team. It was quite timeous. As we say, tomorrow we are meeting to say how do we begin our new cycle. With this report, even though it's high level, but it will assist us one way or the other. Comrades, today in the House, there are, as you are aware, some four reports that are going to be presented to the House. I understand that we'll all be given an opportunity to make a declaration, so that's about 2 minutes, each party, I think. We usually present all of them at once instead of one, unless somebody demands otherwise. Tim?
Yeah, I got confirmation on that. Because there are two reports, there's one on the unauthorized and then there's other one lumped into regular expenditure. They're combining the two, and that's why declarations are now 5 minutes. You normally have a 3-minute declaration or a 2.5-minute declaration. Now it's lumped together.
Right.
I've got clarity on that, just so the members who are super pay understand.
Okay. Great. That's fine. The second element about tomorrow, where is Dome, Mr. Ben? The item on review, it's reviewed 20. I want you to listen. I don't want you to necessarily come to me. I'm saying looking at the program, after tea break, it says review of the Strategic Plan and Annual Performance Plan, APP, for 2018. Okay, no, it's fine. Let's deal with this offline. Comrade Mentor, I hope you've done your prep for tomorrow to do the review. But all of us comrades, let's go and prepare our little notes on the good, the bad, and the ugly for the cycle that has just finished, so that we can plan having clean house and sort to do better. Well, Sasa made a request. Where's Tumi? What did they do? Did they write to you or did they phone?
that today there is a meeting that they need to attend in the evening, and we agreed that we're shifting it to tomorrow. But I've just received a letter here from the acting CEO that we are not yet in a position to provide any meaningful progress made. So can we postpone? So I've just scribbled a response to Mr. Ben that no, we are continuing tomorrow. She must allow us to do our work, and she must do her work. And in view of the seriousness of the matters, I would imagine that she would be very much interested to utilize this platform to clarify where the bottlenecks are, whether due diligence has not been done, or whether the BAC has not said, or whether she has not actually made a recommendation to the minister, or it is that the minister is not yet concurring. So we know where the bottleneck is. So to just say we have not made meaningful progress, let's meet mid-November, I think it's petulance. All right, so Mr. Ben, when we leave here, type that letter, send it to them, and them 6 o'clock tomorrow evening, we'll be meeting with them. All right, can we leave it at this, comrades? Thank you.
Baba. I was late this morning. You can go, I'll see you there.
No, don't talk to me.